When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
That team sure did suck last night. They just plain sucked. I've seen teams suck before, but they were the suckiest bunch of sucks that ever sucked.
Steve Rosenbloom.
There was a keg stand I lost to an 81-year-old lady. She got off the main floor but it was really close.
Mark Grody.
I've been waiting to get a hold of this guy for years. Channel 2 News is out there interviewing people. Yeah, I've been talking to my wife about getting Steve. He once connected my dots and more to my blade. I'm going to dunk his ass.
They suck, so you don't have to.
Can't you morons do anything right?
Founding members of the WB Club.
Smoke weed every day.
The three words that describe this show, and I quote.
Stink, stank, stunk.
It's Saturday Suckage on the Score.
We should be 670 WSUK.
Apologize. What is your name? I don't know who you are, the host.
I am Steve Rosenbloom. This is Saturday Suckage. I'm here. Let's find out who else is here. Grobber.
It sucks and it freebases.
Don Cooper.
If I think something sucks, I'll tell you it sucks.
Jake Garrietta.
This sucks. Really, it does.
Eloy Jimenez.
Hey, you guys not going to make anyway. You guys suck. And when I got traded the next day, oh, welcome to the suck team.
Toby!
Oh my God, this sucks!
Random Bears fan.
And the further we do, we suck!
Terry Bars!
Finally made a list of somebody who thinks he sucks besides I do.
Liam Hendricks!
I wouldn't say seeking perfection, it's just mainly trying not to suck.
Julie Swyka.
Man, that sucks.
Wilson Contreras.
Losing suck. I tell you that, and that's all I can say.
George Went.
We had fun, but there you go. I sucked.
Garth Algar.
Turn it off, man! Turn it off! It's sucking my will to live!
Steve Dahl, the legend.
Disco sucks! Disco sucks!
Candace Parker.
I mean, it sucks.
Roquan Smith.
Yeah, man. Sucks.
Zach LaVine.
It sucks to have it happen game one.
DeMar DeRozan.
You know, it just sucks.
Mike Damn Tomlin.
It all sucks. There's not degrees of suck. It all sucks.
Josh Allen.
Sucks. Losing sucks. Sucks.
Pete Fairbanks.
No, I thought it generally sucked. I didn't think it was a specific suck. I thought it was like an all-encompassing type of suck.
A.J. Pierzynski.
They should have just come out and said, hey, we're going to suck this year. And everyone would have been like, okay.
Pedro Grifol.
We're 20 games in. Our record sucks.
World Series champion Michael Kopech.
It sucks, man. There's no easy way to put it.
Mark Burley.
So it did suck.
JD Martinez.
They say we suck, we suck. Let's suck. Let's go suck together. Let's go have fun sucking.
Bob Costas.
I also don't understand, or maybe I should just applaud you, for having the self-confidence to label your own show Saturday Suckage.
Tyler Farringle.
I suck, so you don't have to.
It's a group effort here at Saturday Suckage. We suck, so you don't have to. We're broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealer. Our phone number here at the Score, 312-644-6767. That'll get you to our listener line powered by BetQL. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. That number, 312-644-6767, also gets you to our text line where it started. The music was playing. I hadn't even said a thing. An 847 texter, all caps, you suck, bang, bang. Yes, that's why we're here. 618 texter, who had the Bears having a potential game-winning touchdown or game-tying field goal in a timeout while letting the clock run to zero on their Thanksgiving bingo card? As it turns out, BSosco82 had it. I think that was it. Let me... BSosco82. What I did Thanksgiving morning is, instead of predict the score, predict how Matt Eberflus would screw up the game. What, in your scenario, could be even more comically sad than what we had seen with the fail Mary and the blocked field goal and the bad clock management and the 53-yard run in Arizona before halftime and all of the stupid Eberflus thinking? And I said, give me your scenarios. BSosco82 texted in, Bears down 2 with 2 minutes to try to score a touchdown. Field goal doesn't get blocked. In field goal range, turnover on downs / clock. That pretty well nails it. Of all the predictions, we saved that one. Thank you very much. Thank you much for playing our game. So what we're going to do today is we're going to interview Bears coaches, in a sense. We're going to go to Nashville. We'll find out about Mike Vrabel. We're going to go to Buffalo. We're going to find out about Joe Brady. We also have some stuff. I got some stuff for you on Cliff Kingsbury. And I'm not sure you want him here. And we have Hub to join us at noon. We'll talk college football because Pete Futak, I mean, this is a massive day in college football. But could the Bears, in their wide-ranging search, go college? We'll find out for Pete if there's somebody there. But first, Kevin Warren had a lot to say this week. Kevin Warren had a lot of weasel words. Weasel words and horrible leadership. Kevin Warren is a bad leader, ladies and gentlemen. He showed it in the last week. When leadership was needed, there was none. When someone did show up, it was the wrong person, and it was loud, and it was a bad impression. But then neuterings publicly generally are. Warren's presence wasn't needed Monday or last Friday or Saturday. Not in a healthy work environment. And that showed how bad a leader Warren is. He showed up 3 days late when he shouldn't have shown up at all. Ryan Poles should have shown up alone. Ryan Poles should have shown up Friday. At worst, Saturday. But it should have been Poles. And Poles alone, his decision, his stage. Warren showed up Monday, and he neutered Ryan Poles. Just look at the body language. Poles is slumped over. Told you how unhealthy a leader Kevin Warren is. If you're a leader, one of the primary tenets is something Thibs always said.
Do your job.
Yes! Warren is trying to do Poles' job when Warren hasn't even done his yet. Or did I miss a shovel in the ground? But there was Warren dominating the GM he was neutering publicly.
Do your job.
Dominating him with weasel words. Here are some of his weasel words.
The next item I want to make sure we're clear about is Ryan Poles is the general manager of the Chicago Bears, and he will remain the general manager of the Chicago Bears. Ryan is young. He's talented, he's bright, he's hardworking. He has done everything in his power on a daily basis to bring a winner to Chicago. And I'm confident in Ryan. My faith remains strong in Ryan. And as leader of our football operations department, and as our general manager, Ryan will serve as the point person on our coach for our upcoming search for a permanent head football coach.
That might be a record for weasel words. If Ryan Poles is the GM, he goes out there by himself to do his job. It's just that simple. You don't need to pat him on the head and give him a cookie. Weasel words. Weasel words from Warren that diminished Poles. A quality leader tells every individual to do his job, and then a quality leader gets the bleep out of the way and allows that person to do his or her job. That's the only way you can fairly evaluate someone. Let the person do the job. But you watch. Warren is going to weasel words this up so badly and then fire Poles for it. Thibs said it, and he was right. Do your job. A good leader lets everyone do it. That's why they're in that position.
Do your job.
Warren said Poles will remain the GM and serve as the point person for the coach search. The GM is always the point person for the coach search. That's his main job. GMs keep a drop-dead list, by the way. They put it in an envelope. They keep it in their top drawer, top right-hand drawer. Drop-dead list. If your coach drops dead, you have a list. You've already compiled of three people who can be your next coach. That's what it is. The GM is, a true GM anyways, is always the point person for the coach search in healthy organizations, in serious organizations. If what happened with Eberflus was Ryan Poles' decision, he wouldn't have had to cede oxygen in the room to Kevin Warren. GM shows up, answers questions about the firing, the process going forward, end of news conference, see you later. What happened Monday wasn't that. That was Kevin Warren and his minion, the waiter who will bring him a selection of available entrees. Again, why is Warren doing Poles' job when Warren hasn't done his own yet? I'll hang up and listen for George McCaskey's humana, humana, humana. This is so Bears. And this is worth bringing back if we had thought of it. Ryan Poles on Pat McAfee saying he was brought in to break the cycle. This was the cycle that Poles was brought in to break. And here's Warren continuing it. They're not letting Poles do his job. They never let anybody do their job. They forced John Fox on Ryan Pace. They forced Eberflus, as a choice of three, on Poles. It's a joke. This is like when Chairman Reinsdorf forced La Russa on Hahn. Rick Hahn didn't quit. He chose to get paid while getting neutered. Ryan Poles didn't quit. Poles is choosing to getting paid to be paid while he's getting neutered, while he's already been neutered. Why do we have such weak GMs in this town? Where's the leadership? Where's the demand, I do the job or I'm leaving? Because you're not going to take the fall for someone else. I know that happens. I also know you don't have to do it. The smothering stench of stupid gas permeates all corners of Hallis Hall, but it's fighting Kevin Warren's ego and weasel words for space. Why is Warren doing Poles' job when Warren hasn't done his own job yet? Did I miss his completed stadium deal? Did I miss that? Did that happen? I think it would have been in all the newspapers. You know, go do that. Kevin, go do your job. Like Olin Krutz also said, here's a tweet from Olin this week. Dear Bears brass, get out of the way and let Poles hire the next Bears coach. No collaboration, quotes around that. One guy making the decision, the quote, football guy. Thank you. Yep, Olin, George McCaskey just got his $15 an hour's worth right there. This is the Bears, and it's screwed up before it starts because this is the Bears, and you want to talk history, George McCaskey, there is all ugly, embarrassing, world-class stupidity part of your history. Who can have confidence? Because this is the Bears. It's all Bearsed up already. And kind of expectedly, right? Wrong guy seems to be doing the wrong job. How's that worked out for everybody? If you're the guy, you get there front and center, and you sound like the guy. Kevin Warren did not let Ryan Poles sound like the guy. You had to do it, if only to let your players know who's in charge. Somebody had to show up Friday, Saturday at the latest, to speak publicly, but speak to the players who were scattered after Thanksgiving, after that loss, after the mess in Detroit. There was no team meeting. There was just a comically pathetic statement released, included the ill-equipped team president. More importantly, what do potential candidates think of the way Kevin Warren's organization dithered? Not knowing they were going to fire a guy, and they let him hold his day after news conference, they fire him after that. That's your Bears organization. That's the public reputation, George McCaskey, as national laughingstock. About 10 days ago, or a couple weeks ago, I mentioned Diana Rossini of The Athletic. She reported Ben Johnson, Lions offensive coordinator, probably the hottest name in the coaching cycle. He places a high priority, she said, on strong management and ownership going forward. What do you think he thought of Kevin Warren publicly neutering the general manager who's going to be the point person who talks to or makes contact with Ben Johnson? He's got to think staying in Detroit is better than being part of the McCaskey clown car that opens up regularly at Hallis Hall. Warren said Friday in a press release, our organizational operational structure is strong, focused, aligned, and energized for the future. Blah, blah, blah. Weasel words, weasel words, weasel words from Kevin Warren. How can they hire a leader when they show no leadership themselves? How would they know what it looks like? The McCaskies and Kevin Warren. They couldn't find leadership at a Harbaugh family Christmas. I'm Steve Rosenblum. I'm going to take a break. Appreciate you listening to Saturday Suckage. We're going to talk about college football's big day. A big day with all the conference championships and a 12-team playoff and all those berths hanging in the balance. This is Saturday Suckage. Yeah, you just heard me talk about Kevin Warren and the Bears. So you knew it. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Hey, listen. Broadcast news, this alert. Tune in this afternoon for the SEC Championship between number 2 Texas and number 5 Georgia. Pre-game coverage will begin at 2:30 with kickoff at 3 right here on The Score and the Odyssey app. Speaking of college football, and I just was, we are now going to go to the guest hotline presented by Circus Sports Illinois, and we're going to speak about college football with the Ubermacher of collegefootballnews.com. He is Pete Futak. Welcome back to the show. Hi, Pete.
How are you doing? How's everything been?
Oh, groovy. Groovy, bordering on bitching. That's how we're doing here. So this is quite the sportsgasm you have today. This is the first conference championship Saturday, and it's being held on December 7th. And the first in a 12-game playoff. It's like a date that will live in infamy. So now what?
It's working. You know, this falls into the category of I hate everything, but I don't hate this. They actually kind of got this right. They're going to screw it up, and they're going to expand it. They're going to do a whole bunch of
face to it. But they finally came up with a way where there's a mechanism to play your way into this thing. Where before it was, you know, the four-team thing is probably the most fair and right and best playoff in sports. But it also relied on a panel of judges to get the teams in the right spot. At least now you know that if you're Arizona State or if you're Iowa State and you win this game that's going on right now, you are going to be in the college football playoffs. So finally there is a way to take it out of the hands of, at least part of it, out of the hands of the judges. So not only are you expanding the playoff, but you're expanding the fan bases. You're expanding the reasons why more teams can care, where now Indiana cares. Iowa State might be in win a conference championship for the first time since 1912 and get into a playoff. I mean, you have at least 15, maybe 16 different schools out there who now are thinking, okay, we're going to be in a playoff, whereas last year and the last 10 years, it's maybe, you know, four or six are going to have a shot to get in it. So it's working so far, at least in terms of interest.
Pete Futak is my guest. CollegeFootballNews.com is the place to read him, and on Twitter at Pete Futak, F-I-U-T-A-K. And you tweeted out that for all the naysayers, the issues, the greed, nitpicking, pearl-clutching, and tantrums and philosophical differences, the college football playoff effectively started actually last night, UNLV and Boise State. So you have 15 schools alive going into the championship weekend, and you said it worked. And so it's a matter of there'll be some people left out without seats, but I believe that this will – you say it worked – to what degree? Because we've seen it in 68-team basketball fields. Bubble teams, those ignored, those snubbed, they're all going to scream and yell. So how did they get this right, and who are the right teams?
Well, start with this. If you're on a bubble and you don't get in, whatever. You know, if you can't play your way in to an NCAA basketball field of 68 teams, and, oh, no, you finished seventh in your conference, and you had the right net rankings or whatever, and you didn't get in. Okay, whatever. You're one of the 68 teams. Someone's got to be left out. Same thing here. So even with the expanded 12-team playoff, percentage-wise, it's still the most exclusive playoff club in American sports because, you know, most pro leagues, you know, half the teams get in. The NBA, if you're counting the play-in game, I think it's like 68% of the teams make a playoff. It's something like 35% for NCAA basketball. You're still talking only about 15% of all college football teams get a shot in the playoff here. So if you're that 12 or 13, so for the South Carolinas and Miamis, and, you know, if SMU loses to Clemson, it's like, oh, we should have been in the 12. Well, you did something wrong to get in there because now there's ways to play yourself in it. It's really about right now if SMU loses. If SMU beats Clemson today, for the ACC championship, it's pretty much set. And that's kind of the thing that's been kind of missing from the whole ESPN blah, blah, blah and their weekly show is that there actually isn't a lot of drama. We actually kind of know all the teams that are in one way, shape, or form. Alabama's at 12. And it's ugly the way they lost to Oklahoma. They're 9-3. They actually don't belong in. I would actually be open to a discussion of, wait a minute, Army only has one loss. They didn't play anybody, but they're a conference champion. They should probably just, you know, throw them a bone and get in there, but they're not going to. But again, we're arguing over the final team here as opposed to the former college football playoff where you're arguing over, you know, a bunch of teams that actually could win it. Like, everyone was crying over Florida State last year, but Georgia was actually better. They lost to, you know, in the SEC championship. But we're missing out on really deserving teams, whereas now we're talking about teams that could get a shot as opposed to really anything egregious of a team that's going to miss out and have a real chance in the national championship.
So will there be arguments over the bye, and would you want to bye? We don't know. We don't have much to base this on. You can look at the NFL, but there are baseball gets a case of the shakes when teams start getting byes, and then the hot team just rolls through them because they played their way from the wild card and whatever they had to do. So we're assuming a bye is good because you get healthy. Some coaches can't coach out of a bye, but will we have arguments over who deserves the free week?
Two glitches in the matrix here. One is that it's actually kind of the sweeter deal to not be playing this weekend. And I know Ohio State fans, I was on all sorts of Ohio stations this week, and everyone get a little sad and all self pity. We lost to Michigan, all that kind of stuff. And it's like, actually, you kind of caught a wee bit of a break. Because now, if you're in Ohio State, or you're in Indiana, or you're in Notre Dame, you get 3 weeks off. I mean, you don't have to, because somebody's going to get hurt today. You're going to have a major injury in one of these conference championship games that matter. So you avoid that. You get a lot of time off to have everyone get healthy. And then you get your 13th game becomes a home game, where sometimes it's actually a better, like if you're in Notre Dame, you're happy getting, Indiana's had a great year. You're happy getting Indiana coming to your house if that turns out to work that way. So there's a lot of breaks to that. The losers in all this are the teams that are going to get in but lose today. So the Penn State-Oregon loser, the Texas-Georgia loser, they catch a bad break because not only do they have the extra game and miss a whole week of time off and probably get hurt and all that kind of stuff, but now they have to play a first-round game and maybe go on the road. The other problem with all this is the lack of reseeding. So you could be the one, you could be the two, and hey, congratulations, you're the one seed in the college football playoff, and your payoff might be Tennessee. Whereas, like, if you're on the flip side and you didn't get in, and you're in Ohio State or someone like that, your payoff is you might get one of this Big 12 champion, or you might get an SMU or a Boise State, which is a much better break. So the fact that there's no reseeding involved here, is a real problem, especially, I know they're not that great, but who wants to face a 12-seed Alabama? It's going to be interesting how this all shakes out, especially with the reseeding side of it.
Pete Futak is my guest. CollegeFootballNews.com is a place to find him, and on Twitter, at Pete Futak. Pete, when discussing all of this, and the committee, you've said before, and he said it all along, committee is going to do what the committee is going to do. And it can have its own analytics. It can have its own guidelines. But it's going to do what it wants to do. So Notre Dame is never out of anything. And same for Alabama because of TV ratings. Whatever that committee needs to do, it's not based on justice and fairness. It's based on generating the most money, right? Or did this change with the 12-team playoff? I don't know how, but it always seems to me that Alabama and Notre Dame are going to get in because they represent dollar signs.
I can say this firsthand. I worked with them a long time ago. I know there's a lot of major flaws with this whole system. The primary one being that they don't know that much about college football. I mean, the committee's made up of real people with jobs and lives, and they do important things in the world. They don't just sit around, poring over, what does that first down against Western Michigan mean to, the whole fabric of college football? They're not that sophisticated. They have every available tool, every available stat, and everything's kind of crazy. And the system actually is good because they have to argue and come to a consensus over each spot. It's not just team wins, team goes up. They have to argue, okay, this team is, we have to come together as a consensus. That's the 25th team. Now we're going to have a debate over the 24 and the 25th. So it's a meticulous process. Now, with all that said, I will say the flip side, the idea of the conspiracy theory is just not there. To know these people and to know how they roll, they're already making their money. Their ad dollars are set. The ratings they would, of course, like, but really, honestly, what they want more than anything else is to catch zero smoke. They don't want any controversy. And so when it comes to that, this whole idea of, we're going to put in Alabama. Well, yeah, I've seen it. I've been in Grapevine, Texas. They have the little box over in the corner that says, in case of emergency, break glass. And then they invoke the because it's Alabama clause. But here's the problem with that. It's right. When has the because it's Alabama thing been wrong when you defer to that? So it's when in doubt, if you go SEC, if you go that way. So long-winded way of kind of saying, There's nothing nefarious here. There's no other thing. We're going to put this team together for TV ratings. And I'll tell you this right now: if they wanted TV ratings, Deion Sanders and Colorado would have found their way in this. They would have somehow gerrymandered the ratings to get him and that team in. So that's part of it. So whatever you think about this whole thing, just know that it is not this rigged system or anything like this. They really are earnestly and honestly trying to come up with the best 12-team tournament possible, because their theory, and this is where they get this right, is at the end of the day, it's the tournament's good, then everything else works out fine. It's not a good thing if they put in a random team for ratings and all of a sudden it's a 35-3 game or something like that happens.
Pete Futak is my guest. We're talking college football here. He's from collegefootballnews.com. He is collegefootballnews.com. You know, you bring up Deion Sanders, and I want to talk about college coaches suitable for the Bears. Now, Deion is not suitable for the Bears. He might be suitable for the NFL and maybe in Dallas. I don't know. He's certainly got experience with Jerry Jones. Not here because no dominant personality, no big personality will ever be here again thanks to the scars of Ditka. The Bears would rather hire librarians than hire somebody who might win. And we've seen a long and inglorious history of the way the Bears have approached that now with Kevin Warren. Kevin Warren's ego seems to be like a gas. It just expands to fill all corners of the room. So in college football, you might find people who are grateful to have the opportunity to not have to worry about the portal anymore and come to the NFL. Who are the candidates whose names will be mentioned, whether it's legit or not, but who are the legit names? Who are the names Bears fans might hear in the college football exit cycle?
To your point, the part of the problem is now, this is probably more a question for Hub later when it comes to this stuff. I don't know why anybody would want, you know, on the flip side, if you're a college coach and you can handle the new system, why would you want to be in the NFL other than it is the NFL and that's, you know, that's movies and these guys are coaching in TV. So it's obviously the NFL's bigger. But the guaranteed money now is off the charts. Yes, if you can, you can never lose ever. You can win 86% of your games, and you can be within a missed kick of a national title, and you can be great every year. And yet, everyone wants you fired if you lose to Michigan 4 years in a row. So there's that stress. But on the flip side of that, if you're the coach today if you're Rhett Lashley for SMU. And you win today, your agent's going to say, hey, lock him up for another 15 years and let's lock him away at $10 million a year, SMU. Like, the money is just insane. Plus, you control everything. You want to talk about being everything to your world. You are the dictator of your program in college. You control every single aspect of this, whereas to your direct point with the Chicago Bears, you control nothing. I mean, you go out there and coach, which is really attractive to some. You know, it's a really attractive idea to not have to kiss up to 16-year-old boys and say, hey, come to my school and we're going to offer you some sort of deals and do all that stuff. That's why guys like Chip Kelly just wanted to be the offensive coordinator for Ohio State. He didn't want to do it. He just wanted to coach ball. That's why you have the former Boston College head coach now, you know, coaching with the Green Bay Packers because just wanted to do it. So it really, really depends on the personality. And to the problem with that becomes, that's why I don't mean to be vague here. I don't think any coach in college is going to be interested in the Chicago Bears for exactly that reason, because you are used to controlling every aspect of your world. And with the Chicago Bears, you're probably controlling nothing. So unless you're able, that's why the only college coaches that kind of fit are the guys who really do know their stuff, you know, and just is so good, like a Harbaugh with the Chargers, that you have to just go after that. There isn't really that guy who is going to take a job like this and not want control over personnel and not want that control over his will, because he's used to controlling every single aspect of his program.
And here I thought I was throwing you a room service fastball during batting practice, and you were going to tell me Lincoln Riley.
You know, maybe. That's the funniest part about all this. The problem is selling Lincoln Riley right now, because you get down to it now after a couple years at USC where I think he's been, you know, not appreciated enough. But it would obviously fit because of Caleb. It obviously fit that your offense works. But then you have to find a really amazing defensive coordinator, because none of his teams at Oklahoma or USC have been able to stop anybody. So the other problem now is he's not exactly the hottest candidate going. You know, he was a big shot guy to get maybe 2 years ago.
Yeah.
But now I don't know that much. Plus about that. Plus again, he is going to want control, because part of his thing, why this all worked, and obviously you're not doing this with Caleb, is that his ability to use the transfer portal has got him the guys he wants.
Now, if he takes the, if he were to take this job, the skill guys are there for the Bears, especially at quarterback. But there's so many other question marks with him right now. I don't know if you're that jacked. You actually probably do want that, you know, robotic guy who just sort of knows how to X and O stuff a little bit better than O'Reilly, who at this point just I don't want to say damaged goods, but isn't quite the hot guy he was before.
Well, then he'll become more reasonable and more malleable under the ever-expanding thumb of the neutering Kevin Warren. I appreciate your time, Pete. Thanks for your expertise. Thanks for your insight.
Absolutely. You have a great day.
You too. Go enjoy conference championship Saturday. Take a break here on Saturday Suckage. And when I come back, the new coach, he's not given to weasel words like Kevin Warren is. He's an interim coach. Maybe he'll be the permanent coach. But let's talk a little Thomas Brown as he gets ready for his first game. Right here on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Welcome and welcome back. Habarkish at noon. Another guest later on as we interview. We do some background. We dive as deep as we can to learn about Bears candidates, coaching, or at least names we've heard. The one who has the job now, Thomas Brown, he seems plain-spoken, properly demanding, no weasel words detected, which makes him different from Kevin Warren. Brown said, football's a violent game and rewards those that'll play the game violently. Physical at every position is going to be our mentality. Well, that's something you would appreciate someone to say as a Bears coach, as any coach, especially coming out of the Detroit game where they're a violent team. And they taught you that. Jervon Dexter, defensive tackle, said, I think he's a dog as a coach. That's the kind of coach he is. If a coach is talking about playing violent and knocking stuff back, a lot of players seem to have no regret in rather enjoying the change. Media walked into the locker room yesterday and there was music playing and DJ Moore was quoted as saying, you hear it? It's like a brighter day in here. We still got time to put some wins out there and stack them. That's what everybody's looking forward to. Yeah. Thomas Brown benefits just by being not Eberflus. Sideline is already smarter, so Bears fans benefit there. The players benefit there. The players know the sideline is smarter. And he seems accountable while holding players accountable. I do love his saying, I don't ask for perfection, just excellence. It shouldn't be news that he seems accountable while holding his players accountable, but Eberflus's greatest failure was failing to read a game and read the room. He couldn't self-scout his own coaching style. His handpicked coordinators became a joke. His laughable offensive coordinator choices fomented a revolution that resulted in his firing. Offensive players had to rally and force an offensive coordinator of Eberflus's decision to coach harder. And here's a guy who was interviewed for that position and wasn't chosen, and then he was a passing game coordinator who wasn't talking to the passer, and now he's the head coach. No one said it was linear. Might be a rocket shot, might be a spasm, a jolt, a spike, and he seems well-grounded to hit those to basically help Caleb Williams soar. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. He seems well-grounded enough to give you that kind of launching pad.
I almost couldn't believe a couple weeks ago when he got promoted and Caleb Williams said, I've barely talked to him since the time it's like, what?
Yeah. Well, anyways, now he's talking to him a lot. He's the guy. And I'm anxious to see how this works out. I mean, there was that first half in Detroit, not so good. But Caleb Williams has been better. So as long as there was music in the Bears locker room, then we'll be music here on Saturday Suckage. We'll bring you one of our Christmas favorites. Here then, the McKenzie Brothers.
Okay, now, this is our Christmas song, in case you don't know what to get somebody for Christmas.
There's lots of ideas in here, so listen and don't get stuck.
Okay. By the way, that's me on the organ.
Oh, jeez. You start.
Okay. On the first day of Christmas, my true love gave to me a beer. On the second day of Christmas, my true love gave to me two turtlenecks and a beer. Okay, good. On the third day of Christmas, my true love gave to me three French toasts, two turtlenecks and a beer. Okay, that should be more there, eh?
Where?
On the fourth day of Christmas, my true love gave to me 4 pounds of back bacon, three French toasts, two turtlenecks and a beer in a tree.
See, you need more.
On the fifth day of Christmas, my true love gave to me 5 golden toques, 4 pounds of back bacon, 3 French toasts, 2 turtlenecks, and a beer in a tree. Okay, on the 6th, 2 golden Christmas, my true love gave to me 6 packs of 2 4. 5 golden toques, 4 pounds of back bacon, 3 French toasts, 2 turtlenecks, and a beer in a tree.
Okay,
on the 7th day of Christmas, my true love gave to me 7 packs of smoke.
Yeah. Oh, 6 packs of 2 4.
5 golden toques.
4 pounds of bag bacon.
3 French toasts.
2 turtlenecks.
And a beer in a tree.
I keep forgetting. Okay. This should just be the 2 days of Christmas. It's too hard for us. Go, Hoser.
Oh, 8th day of Christmas, true love gave to me
8 comic books.
7 packs of smokes. 6 packs of 2 4. 5. Beer. Yeah, that beer is empty. Okay, day 12.
Good day, and welcome to day 12.
Yeah. 5 golden toques, 4 pounds of bag bacon, 3 French toasts, 2 turtlenecks, and a beer in a tree.
We love the McKenzie Brothers here at Saturday Suckage. I hope you do too. Take a break. When we come back, Hub Arcus, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.